Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 53 of Sheer Crime. I'm Amy.
And I'm Kenzie.
Today, we cover another chapter from the Netflix series Catching Killers, Bind, Torture, Kill, or better known as BTK. His reign of terror began in the 70s, and he seemed to be uncatchable. Known for strangling his victims, he got off on the control and the ability to outsmart police. 30 years later, he resurfaces and begins sending packages to news media, taunting them with the threat of another innocent victim. But this time, technology had passed him up. Using computer forensics, video surveillance, and familial DNA comparison, police finally had a face and name for the monster who had terrified the Wichita area for so many years. His name was Dennis Rader. This episode outlines the steps that were taken to locate, capture, and convict one of the most meticulous, ruthless, and dangerous men in America. Let's dive in. Oh my God.
How are you?
I fucking forgot what you even looked like. When was the last time we were together? It's been over like 8 or 10 weeks, I think.
It has to be. Almost the entire summer.
Mm-hmm. And it is crazy. August 1st right now.
It is August 1st. Oh my gosh. It's so good to see you.
It's so good to see you too. I literally didn't think these were ever going to happen.
I know.
I just kept going like, we just keep pushing it off. We got these two episodes ready to go.
Yep.
Ready to sit down and record.
Yep.
Haven't watched the episode since I wrote the notes.
It's been a while, you guys. So bear with us.
It might be a little rough. It might be really entertaining.
Who knows? It might be fun and we might laugh a lot, which is always good. Is always good for a podcast.
For sure. I mean, we're sitting here. We have our drinks.
Yes, we do.
We have our notes.
Yes, we do.
This feels like we just did it.
That's true.
But also, it's been a really fucking long time.
It has been so long. But now I feel like right back into it again. So nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's comfortable.
Like we never skipped a beat.
Yes.
Well, obviously, our summers have been very busy.
Yes. They get busier and busier, I think, every year now that the kids are in sports, as you know.
Yes.
There's things to do all the time. I mean, our weeks are so jam-packed with things. Every single day is something new, but it's a repeat, so we do the same thing every single week, and it's nonstop. And then you have all the fairs and all the things that come up just in the summer stuff.
Yes,
that you have like weekend after weekend is just filled with stuff, so it has been crazy. And you have an almost 1-year-old that's running around your house.
Almost literally running. Yes. He's definitely crawling everywhere. Yes, I have a 1-year-old. I have a 13-year-old. How?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
How?
It's a lot to manage.
We're already trying for the next one.
I'm so excited for you, though. That's very exciting.
It's exciting. It's fucking scary.
Of course.
It's so scary.
Of course, because now you know you're going to have two of them. two little ones.
And I've never had to do that before. Like, I've been a parent twice.
Yes.
Never at the same
time. It'll be so easy.
I hope so.
You just did this last year. It'll be so easy.
Well, and I'm a little like traumatized from it still. I still have PTSD from that day. So I'm like, okay, like it has to just happen.
Yeah.
Like I just have to get pregnant.
Yes.
And then it's there and then I have no choice.
Yes. Right? Exactly.
And then it's just exactly. It is what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm one of those people. I just need to be like pushed into the ring of fire.
Because then
you
can't go back.
No.
Then you're there. It's already happening. So
point of no return.
Here we go. Yeah.
Point of no return. So yeah, a lot of stuff is going on. We're both in new jobs.
We are.
So we're both busy with that.
Oh my gosh, so busy.
Isn't it nuts?
It is so nuts. Like, I'm so not used to, even though I still get to work from home the majority of the time, which is really nice.
Yeah.
it's just so much more management. Like, your days are just fully packed with meetings and different things where you're busy all day. Yeah. And then you go right into the evening where you're busy with activities all night. Right. Try to get dinner in. You try to get the kids showered, you know, every once in a while. Yeah. You know,
hey, a swim in the lake is a bath. Right. We're from Minnesota. We all get it.
It is no joke. It is no joke. When you lay down, you're like, wow, how did that much of a day just fly by without me even knowing it, because it was so fast. So it has been very nuts.
Yeah. With that, we have a lot going on. Yes. Life has changed a lot.
Life has changed a lot for us since the pandemic, when we first started this podcast back in 2020.
Yes.
And it's sad for us to say, but we will be doing these last two episodes and then we will be done with the podcast. It was a very, very hard decision.
So hard.
It still hurts me to even say it.
It's why I think I didn't want to get together tonight to do this. Because then it's real.
Yes.
We had these two episodes. We kept pushing it off. And it's like, nope, we're just taking a break. Just taking a little break. A summer break. But now it's like, no. Like, there is a finale.
Yep.
And it's coming.
And, you know, I don't want to say it's forever, because our life could change in a couple years and we could bring it right back up. Who
knows? Absolutely.
Like, things can always change. But at this point in time, I literally will have no time for editing. Not even an hour. It's so crazy how busy just everything has gotten. And I think my job is a huge part of that, too.
Yeah.
Because even though I still work at the same place, it's just a totally different job. It's so absolutely different than what I had been doing before and had been doing for 5 years. Right. And, I was so used to that.
Get a comfort level.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. So that's been a huge thing, too. But again, you know, you're going to be having another baby soon. That is going to be super time consuming as well for you.
I know.
Right? And then you also want to have, you know, a personal life. You want to do things.
What's that?
I don't have friends.
I don't
sometimes
know what that means.
Try to have friends.
I would like to try to have friends. That key word is try.
Yes.
There's definitely not a whole lot of that going on in my life right now, but that happens.
Honestly, we hang out with our neighbors a lot because we're home. We don't go away from our house a lot. So, those are the people we typically will, meander over to because they're across the street.
Right.
You know? And that's just how chaotic life is right now. And
it's nuts.
It stinks because, this has, been the one thing that
is you for you.
Yes.
I know. I thought the same
thing.
I was like, this is, the one thing I do for me. And so it's very weird to think that, now the fuck what? What? Now I'm just a mom again.
Yeah.
You know?
And again, I definitely don't want it finite. I don't want to say that it's going to happen forever. This is just how it's going to be forever. But just the way life is right now, I mean, I don't think I'd get any sleep. Honestly, I think I would just be so consumed, you know, with editing and trying to even when we started pushing to every other week for our episodes, that is still hard for me because the editing process takes so long. And I think it's just, like you said, our lives have kind of changed. We had a lot more free time in 2020.
Well, yeah, you and I had conversation. So life changed a lot in 2020 when everything locked down. We all started working from home. None of us were used to that.
Right.
We suddenly had all of this free time in our lives that we hadn't had before. A lot of it due to commuting. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, now we have slowly but surely filled up that free time.
Right.
It's not free time anymore. It's just regular time that we have. And in my opinion, time we all should have fucking had in the beginning.
Right.
Right. We should have all had that time. The amount of time I get with my family now, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Never had that.
Right.
And thank God.
Oh,
because a lot of people, that's what they needed.
Yes.
Right? But like I said, we got used to it. And then it became our everyday. And then we became filling it up with other things and life and family. And like you said, our kids are getting older.
Yes.
They have activities that take up a lot more time. It is what it is.
Yeah.
It's
just tough. And you know, I want to try new things to myself, like different hobbies. Like, of course, I love podcasting, but I've always wanted to learn a new language, spend some time doing that.
That
or
sounds terrible.
Take singing lessons or something. Right.
Yeah, you should totally do that.
You know what I mean? Just little things like that. I'm like, I could probably try to sneak in an hour or two a week of doing something like that, you know, just minimal, but just different, you know, yeah. Because
it's a lot less time consuming.
Yes. Than this. It is different.
Something else to consider too, is that when we started this, we were paying somebody to edit each episode for us.
That's true.
Every episode was edited for us. You had a lot more free time to do it. The hardest part was taking the notes.
Right.
Because we had to sit down and actually do them.
Right.
Aside from that, we passed it off to somebody overseas who would do it, send it back to us within 3 days, and then we would post it.
Yep.
That changed last year when, you know, things started happening and you had your trip that you were saving up for and, you know, we had a baby coming. So it was like, let's start editing this ourselves.
Yeah.
That's a big thing to take on.
And it's just something you forget about because, you know, I'm usually here 3 hours for an episode, roughly, doing the episode. Then you put in about 8 to 10 hours editing. And then to do more notes, that's another 3 to 4 hours. And at one point, we were doing that every week. Right. So, like, I remember, like, when we first started, it was Mondays, I had to do this. Then Tuesdays, I had to do this for the podcast. And then we had a release on Wednesday. And then we had to start right again on Thursday because
Thursday we got together and recorded.
Yes. And then you had to do that. And then you had to, like, the next notes for the next week. And then I had to edit. It was just like, it was constant, but I had the time.
Yes.
And so it's just a different life and it's sad, but I don't want to make it finite. So just so you guys are aware, that's what's happening. We're going to have a lot of fun. These last two episodes, we're very, very excited about it.
Yes.
And we love you all and appreciate your support. I mean, it's been amazing. And
amazing.
We hear so many wonderful things and people love our podcast. And that's also, that makes us sad too, because we want to continue that as well. But I think everyone can understand where this kind of just is too much. It's a lot. It's a lot for us to take on right now.
Well, let's be honest. Both of us sort of half expected, half hoped, probably mostly hoped, that this would take off.
Yes.
And we would have all the time in the world to do it.
Yes.
And it would be a weekly thing and maybe a twice a week thing, but it just didn't happen that way.
Right.
Which is fine.
And that happens to a lot of podcasts. It's hard. Unless you can dedicate a lot of time and make this your full-time job. I mean, if you think about all the big podcasts out there, they have 10 to 15 people working on the podcast.
Well, and most of those people were already famous before they started their podcast.
Right. And they have producers and they have people that do all the certain aspects of the podcast, whereas like it's just us.
Yeah.
So we're all of it.
Grassroots.
Yes.
On the ground doing it all.
Yeah. So not what we wanted, but kind of where we're at. And so we wanted to let you guys know. That's why we haven't really gotten together lately. And again, it has been so busy. I had no time. Every week something came up for you or for me. Like, we could never figure out a time frame. And then, you know, with kids, we needed to make sure someone was here to watch the kids. And so there's...
Yeah, I have two teenagers babysitting right now.
Yes.
In the other room.
Yes. We're making it work.
We're making it work. Well, I also, like, half expected to come on here today and be like, Kenzie, I won that 1 billion mega million... lottery.
Yeah.
And here's a huge portion for you. You can quit your job now, and this is what we're doing. Yes. We're also going on a vacation.
What a dream.
I woke up this morning so fucking pissed that I had to log in for work because I was fully prepared to get on our team meeting today on Monday and be like, it was nice knowing you all.
Yes.
Peace the fuck out.
Yes.
We also bought like a group ticket together, so they would have all been saying the same thing. But I'm just... I was really expecting to do that.
Oh, trust me. We had pools with our neighbors, for ourselves, with my family. We kind of all went in because I was like, who's not going to go on? This is a lot of money.
Yep.
Who's not going in on this, right?
Yep.
We don't buy lottery tickets that often, but, you start to fantasize. I think everyone kind of does, you know, when you actually participate, because I don't buy lottery tickets.
I don't either.
Ever.
No.
So when I do, I'm like...
I'm going to win.
We have a chance.
Yep.
We actually have a chance now. We never did before because we don't buy tickets.
No.
So we don't have a chance anymore.
I know.
So I think you all have that anticipation and you kind of think of like what you would do and where you would go and how you'd spend your money, how you'd invest your money, you know what I mean?
Yep.
How you'd quit your job.
I fantasize about that a lot.
Yes.
And I don't even hate my job, but I would just like to not have to work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everyone can say the same.
I feel like I should have been born like, I don't know, a Hilton or a Kardashian or somebody who doesn't have to work. Yeah, I should have been born that way.
I know. I should have made it on American Idol back when I tried out for American Idol when I was like 14. damn it. I missed it. I missed the spot to make it famous and, you know, do something I actually love. And,
I know.
Yeah. So we'll stop the pity party here because now it's getting into a pity party because we didn't win.
I know, right?
So.
Yeah. Fucking A.
And we will get into this episode because, surprisingly enough, we've never done a BTK before.
I don't glorify serial killers, right? I'm not like, oh my God, I love this guy because he's so right. whatever. But this case has always been kind of one that's like, oh, it's a big one for me.
Well, and it's intriguing because, like, it took them a long time to find him.
A really
and
long
he
time.
Was could potentially become like the Zodiac killer where no one knows who he is.
Right.
You know, just become this phenomena of like, who's BTK? We'll never know. And
right.
is he dead already? Is he not? Like, there was just this, what if? What if we don't catch him?
Right.
So I think that's what really got people's attention here. And the fact of his background and how everyone thought he was just like this fucking great guy. I'm like, why is it always those fucking people that like people are like, oh, he's the nicest neighbor. He's the nicest guy, like fucking Golden State Killer. All his neighbors said he was like the nicest fucking guy. And he had a fucking killing rampage for years and years and years and decades and didn't get caught. You know,
yeah.
It's just it's one of those things where you're like, holy shit.
I know.
This happened in our lifetime, like catching these people. They caught them because of these DNA ancestry kits and like all this new age technology, which back then they're like, they'll never catch me. They'll never be able to.
Yeah.
And now they're like these old disgusting men that thought, oh, I finally got away. Got away with it, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to die, quote unquote, innocent man, living my life the way I want to, and no one's going to know. And then all of a sudden, their children and their grandchildren are getting DNA ancestry kits done, and they get fucking caught. It's amazing.
It's amazing. Thank God for the younger generations who just, you know, don't give a shit about anything.
I know. It's amazing.
And just
it's amazing.
Put it all out there.
So, yes, I know how you say, like, it's not glorifying these people. I think they're just very intriguing cases.
Yeah.
And just the length of time.
That's what I think.
That's what's crazy.
About this one. Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, before we jump in, we do have our traditional popping of the top.
We do.
So what did you bring over for us today?
So I had a mishap with my garage fridge and it went out on us. So I didn't have much left over that was actually still good. So I just had a couple of Vizzies left over. They're different flavors, so we're not drinking the same flavor, which is fine.
Yeah.
I'm drinking the strawberry kiwi.
And I have pineapple mango. So down at the bottom, it says with antioxidant vitamin C from acerola superfruit. Literally, I'm sitting here reading it as areola.
I saw that too.
And I'm like, areola superfruit?
What is that?
Good Lord! That's just
the
breast milk.
You learn.
That's just breast milk, right?
Right. Mixed with breast milk. Perfect. All right.
Ready?
Let's do it. Always good.
That is good. I don't think I've had this one before.
Really?
I've had that one before, I think. I think you brought those over before.
Yeah, so I always buy this. It's this specific pack. I don't remember like the name of it. It's like their standard variety pack.
Yeah.
But I love the blueberry. They have like a blueberry one in there.
Mm.
It is so good. It's mixed with like raspberry, maybe like blueberry raspberry, or I can't remember what it is, but it's phenomenal. But
okay.
This is all I had left. So
no, it's good. For our last episode, I have a bottle of our wine upstairs.
Perfect. That sounds great.
Yes. So for Clink our last episode, that's what we're having.
Wine glasses. Yes, that sounds wonderful.
Yes.
Okay. We always have so much fun with wine.
We do.
Okay, so we're 20 minutes in now. We talked a lot.
Sorry,
this
guys.
Beginning. It's all good. It's all good things. But we will get into this episode.
Because my daycare is getting upset upstairs, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Okay. All right, so I did the intro. Why don't you kick off episode 53, Catching Killers?
So this episode is really kind of a telling of the entire BTK story, especially from the detectives nowadays side of it.
It's a bird's eye view of the entire thing, because like we mentioned, it's a big, long one.
Absolutely. So the first person that we meet in today's episode is Detective Kelly Otis, and he was a homicide detective in 2004 with the Wichita Police Department. Kelly's dad died when he was young and he was raised by a single mother. He entered the police academy when he was just 21 years old. He did 11 years as patrol and then he got promoted as detective. I will say it again. I want to be a fucking detective. I did not know you had to go through this kind of, like, it was a promotion type of thing. It's a
promotional thing.
You know, like, you have to start as a police officer, then move your way up. I'm like, can't you just, like, go to detective school and be a detective?
No, there's no detective school.
I would love that, though. I could just go right into being a detective, totally my jam. Yeah. Would love that.
Yeah, that whole, like, patrol thing, not really my jam.
Not so much. Just
give me a badge and let me walk around in a suit. I got this.
Yes, exactly. After Kelly got promoted, he started working with his partner, Dana. And we meet Detective Dana Gouge. Since Dana was a little kid, he had always dreamed of being a detective. He just couldn't take it when people would commit horrible crimes and get away with it. When they first got the letter from BTK, they formed a task force including Kelly Otis, Dana, and Tim Ralph. We now meet Tim Ralph as well.
Yes.
And he remembers BTK from his childhood. Okay. So when he was a kid, he remembers BTK. This is how long it spanned. Decades, you guys. Decades. Very long time. And they didn't worry about the boogeyman. They worried about this brutal murderer, BTK, when he was younger. Like, so that's crazy. What everyone talked about. They didn't talk about the boogeyman. They didn't talk about these, like, movie characters. Yeah, it's not a paranormal thing. They know that this guy's still out there.
Real fucking life.
In their neighborhood.
Like, living around them.
They don't know who he is. And no idea. It's scary.
Yeah.
And once BTK reemerged, they knew it was time for them to catch this guy. Detective Gouge had been looking through the old BTK files, photographs, and diagrams of the different crime scenes. And the first murders linked to BTK were the Otero family in 1974. The entire family, you guys. Mm-hmm. The whole family. And BTK had cut the lines to their home and entered through the back door and ended up taking control of the whole family. He strangled Mr. Otero, Mrs. Otero, and their young son. He took their 11-year-old daughter, Josephine Otero, to the basement of their house where he bound her up and hung her from a sewer pipe. It was extremely disturbing to look at those crime scene photos. I can't even wrap my mind around that because I know some of his photos have been leaked and I've seen some of them of how he has tied these women up.
Yeah.
And it is, I'm not, it's out of a horror film. Like, it's something that doesn't look real.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, just the mind frame of doing something like that to someone, especially an 11-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. Oh, just breaks my heart.
I know. In the show Mindhunter,
mm-hmm.
the whole, like, story that's going behind the scenes of the story of the show is BTK's reign. And one of the episodes shows them going down into the basement and finding Josephine. And, like, all you see is, like, her legs, you know, like, dangling from the top. So, like, they reenact it all, too, to make it even more realistic as to what actually happened for the police who found them that day. God. It's just, I got fucking goosebumps.
I know. It's.
It's cold in here.
It is a little chilly in here. But it's one of those things where this sounds horrible, but when an adult is murdered, yes, it's horrible. It's horrific. It's sad. When you hear that a child is tortured and murdered, it is a different kind of fucking rage.
It's like, a different, yep, that hits different.
Oh, that's when you get the goosebumps. That's when you get, like, the built up, like, fire in your belly because you're feeling. So fucking mad. Like, how could someone do that to a child?
Yep.
Someone who is just innocent and naive and doesn't know about all these horrible things that could possibly happen to them, right?
Right.
Not to say, again, that, you know, an adult getting murdered is not as bad. I think it just...
Some people deserve it.
It hits me different. It just... The child aspect, I can't. BTK's second murder victim was Catherine Bright. His next victim after Catherine was Shirley Vian. And then there was Nancy Fox, who had been bound and tortured. So these are happening in relatively quick succession, where they're finding these bodies of these women, and they're all linking them together because of what BTK, like, either how he does it, what he leaves. I don't know if he has, like, his staple, you know, BTK, what would you call it? signature.
His MO, his method of operation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he definitely had some of it. I mean, it was the way he tied his knots.
Yep.
And the ropes that were used. And they weren't always like strangled, right? It wasn't always like a noose.
Yep.
But maybe the person was like suffocated by a pillow, but was, you know, tied up
yep.
first. So those all started to look, they were very specific.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, okay, there's no way that like there's random people out there all tying this exact right. same intricate knot.
Right.
So something linked them all together and they were like, okay, we're looking for one person.
Yes. And then later on, he started sending right. notes. We kind of all know about like the later on. But I think at the beginning, like his killing style was the same every time.
Right.
So I think they just kind of started putting two and two together.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest part was that he would torture these people. So it wasn't just the killing. It was the torture.
Yes, absolutely.
Which, oh my God, I would rather just be killed. The torture part is what scares the shit out of
and
me.
And that is what he got off on. I guarantee it.
Sure.
And that is so terrifying. I swear to God, I would rather be shot in the head.
Absolutely.
Just end it. Just end it now. I don't want... Oh, it gives me like the heebie-jeebies. Like, I just like can't. I don't like the idea
of being like tied up and having somebody be able to do whatever the fuck they want
no.
to. And I am just there.
No.
You know? No. And awake for it? No.
Absolutely not.
Mm-mm.
Now, shortly after BTK had killed all of these people, he had sent multiple communications to the media to describe what he had done. And the name BTK came from bind, torture, kill. Detective Otis said that they knew that if he did start sending letters again to police like he did back in the 70s, they may have a shot at catching him.
Sure.
There was a much better way of testing fingerprints and DNA now that if he had one mistake or one misstep, they'll be able to pick up on that.
Well, yeah, we're now talking, it's yes. in the 2000s.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're in the 2000s, so DNA is very, very prevalent, and they are finding a lot of people. People, it's right. really hard for people to get away with murder nowadays. It's very difficult.
I don't know how anybody thinks they can.
I know. It's, no one is that smart, especially when you're doing something like murdering someone.
Yeah.
Your rational brain, gone.
Yeah.
It's out the window after it happens, because now you're just trying to get the hell away from the person you just killed, so you're not right. in their presence.
Yep.
Whoops, forgot that I left my shoe track and I'm wearing my same shoes, or I didn't clean them off and the blood's still on the bottom of my shoes.
Yep.
Or I grabbed onto something and now my fingerprint's in the blood on the countertop that I just ran, you know?
Yep.
Like, people are just so stupid. It's like...
they're so stupid. Yeah.
They think they're smart and they're not.
Yeah.
BTK's main goal was to spread panic and fear through the community. This also gave him the thrill. Not only the torturing and the killing of these innocent people, but the thrill of having everyone else be terrified of
and
him.
You know
and
that
him
he's
knowing
hearing
it.
About it.
Yes.
Yeah, because everyone's
sees
talking
it.
About it.
Everyone's talking about it. He sees it from his neighbors, the people he works with, whoever it is.
Yep.
Everyone's talking about it and he loves it. He really wanted to gain national attention. That was his kind of main goal.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to use the media to their advantage to appeal to his narcissistic side. Of course.
I mean, makes sense.
They're talking him up. It's going to make him want to reach out more. I mean, it's a very smart tactic. We see a taped news report that states, quote, Wichita Police Department on Friday received a letter that most likely came from BTK, end quote. Detective Gouge says that they were hoping that he would send additional letters or packages without actually killing again, so they would be able to obtain DNA and fingerprint information. Of course, they were hoping that he wasn't going to continue his crime spree, right?
Right.
Back to the news report, we see Detective Kelly Otis state, quote, "This is one of the most challenging cases I've ever been involved with, and I find the individual that is doing this would be very interesting to talk to," end quote. He tells us that the community fell right back into being completely fearful. So this is, what, 30 years after, like, his reign of terror started?
Mm-hmm.
And now people are in fear again because now they know this dude is still alive.
Because part of you thinks or hopes that he died or moved away.
Or he's in prison somewhere for yep. something else. You know what I mean? Like, you're...
because it stopped.
You have to be hopeful that, okay,
yep.
maybe he's not doing this anymore.
Nope. Just took
so now people are very scared again.
He was just hibernating.
Now, it had been a little over 6 weeks and they had not heard a thing from BTK, but finally they get a phone call. The news station had received new communication, allegedly from BTK, so the police need to head out there immediately to retrieve the letter to see if they could pull any information from it. So it was a new letter. Again, he's playing these games with the police. It's like this cat and mouse, right? He wants, like, place these things kind of all over very random, sporadic things.
Yes.
And, like, be sneaky about it. It's so...
He likes to watch
them. It's weird. It's very weird.
I mean, I kind of get it. It'd be fun to watch people, like, run around trying to figure out who you are when you think that you're so much smarter than them.
Well, especially now that he's not killing anymore.
Right.
So he doesn't get the thrill of that anymore. So this is, like, the best alternative for him,
but
I'm
they
sure.
don't know that he's not killing anymore.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. The detectives immediately shipped the letter off to the crime lab, again, hopeful that they could get some DNA, a hair sample, or a fingerprint from the document.
Yeah.
And when they opened it up, the letter was really bizarre. And there was this, like, word search puzzle that they had to try and figure out. Again, it's a game that he's trying to play.
Yeah. Detective Rolfe says that they had found some words within this word search, such as victim, follow, insurance man, lost pet, serviceman. Just these words where they were like, what does this mean? They're clearly intentionally put there, but why?
Right.
Detective Otis tells us that no DNA was recovered from the letter when the crime lab processed the evidence. No hairs, no fibers, no fingerprints. So frustrating. So they opened up a BTK tip line and released it to the media for help.
Mm-hmm.
Again, trying to, you know, if we put this out on the media and it's out there on the news, he'll see it. Somebody will know something or hopefully just give them anything that will help kind of bring them closer to this guy. The phones began to ring immediately and they never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Detective Gouge tells us that 400 or more tips came in the first 24 hours. And by 48 hours, it was over 1,000 tips.
That is nuts.
That is nuts.
I mean, I think a lot of people are just, like, speculating or, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, I know so-and-so. I think he could totally do it, you know, just because they might not like the guy.
Oh, I know several people who are probably serial killers. Right. Like, they have bodies in their basement. I'm sure of it. So people are calling from now all over the country. So it's not just Wichita. Because, again, they went national with this information. And people have suspicions on who they think BTK is. Detective Otis says that it was really pretty overwhelming, though. But they did have a huge advantage in 2004 over previous detectives in this case.
For sure.
So police officers back in the day took great care of the evidence that they collected from the crime scenes, even though they didn't know what to do with it at that point. So they were able to get DNA profiles on BTK from the Otero home collected back in 1974.
That I still can't understand. How the hell?
You cannot tell me that there are not time travelers. You cannot tell me that somebody didn't go back and know that this information was going to be helpful 30, 40 years down the road.
But I mean, how do they preserve it? Is it like frozen?
I would like to know
is
that
it
too.
Like, what do they do to ensure that this is not going to get compromised in any way? For what, 40 years later?
40 years. You can't tell me some plastic baggie's going to keep that okay.
Right.
I know.
It's so strange.
It's
I love it.
So strange.
It is fucking amazing.
It
but
is.
But still, it's weird.
No,
I don't get it.
No. Nope.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. It's super weird. My mind cannot comprehend.
No.
So at this point, if there was a potential suspect, they just needed to collect their DNA and they'd know if it was him or not because they have the profile for BTK. So they worked all hours and relied on Diet Mountain Dew's high caffeine content to fuel this fight.
Absolutely.
Detective Dana Gouge tells us that his family life suffered, though, because they were consumed with BTK. Catching him was, above all, priority number one. I get it. I think anyone who is in a relationship with a police officer, detective, anybody who is fighting crime, they know what they're signing up for.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of nights where their spouse is not home with them because they are out doing what nobody else wants to do.
Right.
Detective Rolfe tells us that he was very frustrated as they were heading into 6 and 7 months of investigating and they had no real suspects with all of these leads. So on long nights, he'd go home, kiss his wife, look in on his kids as a quick pick-me-up to carry him through, and then head back to the office. One night, he remembers getting a call very late that an unusual package was found taped to a stop sign at First and Kansas, which must be two roads. They didn't exactly specify right. that, but that's what we're going to say. Inside, multiple index cards titled Death on a Cold January Morning were found. It was a blow-for-blow play on what had happened to the Otero family.
That's sick.
It is sick.
That is fucking sick.
You know that he's just reliving
that. Of course. But that's... That it just makes it more disgusting and disturbing.
Well, and like, what a random thing to just go tape it to a stop. Who the fuck found that? Who in the middle of the night is walking around, drive around, and they're like, that's like something weird taped to a stop sign. I'm going to pull that off and take
right,
a look.
Right. He wanted it to be that way, though.
This is why I don't do anything fun. Because I'm at home by 7 p.m. every night. Yes. This is why I don't crack cases. This is why I don't win millions. This is my problem.
Yes.
I'm a homebody. And nothing That's is okay, found though. At home.
You're safe at home. That's good.
You'd think. The Oteros were not. They were home.
That is true.
And it was in the middle of the day.
That is true. But we now have cell phones. They can't cut lines to cell phones. So
that's true. So fuck you.
Right.
They could cut my air conditioning off. That would certainly get me out of my house real fast.
Yes, it would.
God. Okay. Back to the story. So this play-by-play included how BTK had picked out the Oteros as his victims, how he had approached their house, and what he did with each individual victim. With so much detail, how could it be anyone but him? Like, who right. else would know that? At this time, Detective Ralph had 5 children of his own, and his oldest was 10. So he's looking at his kids and thinking, how could someone have strangled and hung 2 children back then? Like, looking at his kids.
Right.
Also, Detective Ralph, you're clearly not home enough, because I understand how somebody could strangle 2 children. I get it. I hold back, yes. but I get it.
Yes.
Detective Otis tells us that upon going through tips one Saturday night, he comes across a very interesting one. This gentleman matched what investigators knew about BTK. So the things that they knew about him as a person started to kind of match up with this guy that they had been, you know, led on to. Detective Gouge tells us that the consensus was that he'd be extremely smart, probably lived alone, and they had an eyewitness at the Catherine Bright murder back in the 70s who believed him to be in his 20s at the time. So now this would make BTK in his 50s.
Right.
So he's still able-bodied, like right. out there doing shit.
Right.
Detective Otis says that the person named in the tip was a professor, a shut-in type guy who lived with his mother until she had died. I mean, huge red flag.
Right.
So Otis gets a hold of Detective Gouge to go check it out. Let's go take a look, he says. Detective Gouge tells us that they didn't receive good suspects very often, so this possibility of being BTK was, like, huge. When they get up to the door, they could hear footsteps inside the house after knocking, and then all of a sudden the door slowly opens.
Detective Otis says that that's when he sees the tip of a butcher knife. He immediately says, "Sir, this is the Wichita Police. I need to ask you a few questions, but I really would like you to put that knife away."
Sir?
That should go without saying, but please put the butcher knife away.
Should you put the knife down?
He and Detective Gouge look at each other and agree that this encounter with him was really strange. Who opens the door with a knife first? Knife first, not like...
It's the 2000s. You open the door with a gun.
Right.
What the fuck you doing with a knife, man?
Right. The gentleman comes back, opens the door, and then just turns and walks inside. Doesn't say anything to them. And
sort
just
like
turns.
He's expecting them.
It's weird. And they said they got a really creepy feeling about it. It's just...
Oh, for sure.
Because it's not natural.
No.
You open the door and you start talking to the person that's there, not just let them into your house and walk away without saying anything. Like, that's weird.
Doesn't it sound like a haunted house?
Yes.
Like
it's not real. Like, it's a ghost.
Yeah.
Letting you in.
Or the guy's like, come on in. And then, like, you know, ducks behind a corner and jumps out and scares you when you walk in.
Yes. Detective Gouge remembers that the house was really dusty and dark, and it took their eyes a little bit of time to adjust to it. And while Detective Otis was talking with this guy about taking a DNA swab, Detective Gouge had been looking around the room and he sees all these ropes everywhere that were tied in knots. It made the hair on the back of his neck stand up.
So, like, what? Is there just, like, a bunch of ropes, like, just strewn about with knots all over them? Like, is this a nervous tic or something?
It seems to be, because, again, this is not BTK. This turns out not to be him.
But it's still strange. Weird.
He's still a weird dude. Because something else is going on there. He could definitely have bodies under his house, too. Who knows?
Totally does.
You know? He does.
Including his mother. Hands on. She's under the house, too.
Right. Now, he was trying to get Detective Otis's attention to notice these knots when his flashlight flashes over an engineering book. Detective Otis tells us that one of the first letters from BTK sent back in the 70s was placed in an engineering book in the library called Applied Engineering Mechanics. That is crazy that they would remember that. Like, they would remember that that happened way back when in the beginning. Like, put two and two together that quickly? That seems crazy.
I can get it. But also, now kind of makes me wonder about my dad, who's an engineer and knows how to tie knots. And right. He's in his 80s, not his 70s. Never mind. He's not him.
So Detective Otis recalls just standing in this man's house who fits the BTK profile by age. And he had a huge fascination with knots and engineering. His immediate thought was, this could be the guy. This man did let them swab his mouth, and as he was walking out of his house, he got goosebumps. So, we know he's not BTK, but that's so fucking weird. Like, keep an eye on that dude. Like, yeah. Just because he's not BTK doesn't mean he's not doing weird shit. That is all fucking weird shit. All of it.
Yeah. He's like, still a naughty guy. Naughty.
I wasn't expecting that reference.
If I didn't take that shot, we would have lost it.
I know. They immediately took his swab right to the lab for testing and pushed it to the front of the line. They thought that if anyone was BTK, this was most likely their guy. 2 days later, they get the news that it wasn't a match. It was a bit of a disappointment because they are back to square one. I mean, they're like, fuck, finally, we cracked it. Like, we know who he is. We'll fucking nail him. He'll be in jail forever. Like, fucking great.
Yeah.
And then they just get the devastating news that it's not him. I mean, thankfully, they didn't convict the wrong person, right? And, like, the wrong guy's in prison.
But still, like, how many red flags you have to have as a man?
I know.
To not be BTK.
Right. And it's just weird that there were so many similarities. That it maybe seems very strange.
Maybe he was a fan.
Could be.
Could have been a fan.
I didn't even think about that because I'm like, it just seems weird that there would be so many connections to BTK and he was acting all strange. Maybe he wanted them to think he was him. Who knows? It was weird.
I mean, mental illness is a thing.
Absolutely. Detective Otis reads some of the letter they received from BTK. Quote, I have spotted a female, a latchkey kid. Just got to work out the details. I'm much older and have to condition myself carefully. I think fall or winter will be just right for the hit. End quote. Detective Otis continues to tell us that BTK was basically telling law enforcement that he had already picked out his next victim and that it was a child.
Yeah.
You guys.
Petrifying.
So this is like in today's age.
Yep.
He's basically saying that he's going to continue his reign of terror and it's going to happen here shortly. So they need to catch him. Otherwise, there's going to be another murder on their hands.
Yeah.
And he was becoming more bold because they had not caught him yet. And again, that's terrifying to think about. But it had been so many years for him. He's like, they're never going to catch me.
Right.
They didn't catch me back then. They're not going to catch me now. And it's like, I'm so glad he thought that. Like, I'm really glad he went down that like hole where like, I'm just way too smart for them. Like,
I think that's why he didn't kill again. Because he had done so well.
Right.
The first time where it's like, nope, I'm not even going to like fuck it up. But he got cocky.
Right.
And started playing with them. And then they kept looking.
Right.
I think if he'd have just stayed dormant, they never would have found him.
Well, I don't know because his...
I think it would have been a longer time to find him.
It would have been a longer time.
Because the packages kept it all fresh.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I think the DNA, I mean, them having his DNA profile, right? And then having the DNA ancestry stuff come back. I mean, again, you're probably right. It would have taken a lot longer, but yeah. I'm just glad he's fucking in prison for the rest of his life. Miserable life. Detective Otis recalls that his stress was just through the roof at this point. Like, knew he needed to catch BTK. And he tells us that when he would get home after a long day, he would put on mindless TV and drink a bit of whiskey. And he would crawl into bed, but he wasn't able to turn his brain off. It just kept turning and turning, like, who could it possibly be? Did I miss something? Whatever it could be, right? I'm sure that is stressful.
Oh my God, if my brain races for fucking nothing, I can't imagine what people actually go through horrific shit all day.
Well, and
think about.
And the nerves of not knowing if he's going to kill someone again.
Right.
And, like, then you're going to feel like you could have done something faster to not let that murder happen,
because
right?
Because he sort of warned you.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Now, when these nights would happen, he would get out of bed, shower, shave, put on a clean suit, and just go back to work. Oh, that just sounds really bad for your mental health.
I literally cannot imagine.
No, absolutely not. How much are you paying me? Overtime? Like, what? Absolutely not.
This is why I'm not a detective.
Right. I couldn't do
detectives
that.
And real estate agent. Like, no.
It's all the time.
I couldn't fucking do it. I couldn't do it.
Now, sometimes other officers would go into work early because they weren't able to sleep either. And they would take the time to think about theories and strategies on how to catch this guy.
Can you imagine just, like, hanging out at 4 in the fucking
Absolutely
morning?
Absolutely not. What? How do you, like... How do you function? I mean, yes, you can, like, drink caffeine. You can, like, do things to help you stay awake. But how is your mind clear enough to, like, actually think of good theories and good strategies on how to, like, catch this guy?
8 hours of sleep and I cannot fucking form sentences.
I know. I'm like, I need the sleep. So I can't imagine. And maybe they're just accustomed to it. Maybe it's so normal for them to
maybe
only get a couple hours of sleep.
They're better people than we are.
I'm sure.
Totally better people.
Yes.
They have, like, they're human.
Yes.
And I'm subhuman.
Yes.
I don't know what. I'm part? I don't know.
Now, BTK had sent yet another communication that stated, quote, "Where between 69th Street North and 77th Street North on Seneca Street? Have you or PD received number 7 at Home Depot drop site January 8th of 05? End quote. He was wanting them to know that they had missed 2 packages from him. And this was crucial. He could have left something else in there that could help them solve this, right?
Yeah.
And it was game on now. Detective Gouge says that he had drove up to North Seneca to retrieve the first package. The area where this package was super secluded. The road was sand and dirt, and it was leaning up against a street sign. And the package was a Post cereal brand box, like that old, do they even have that cereal anymore?
Toasties cornflakes.
Is that what it is?
That's what I wrote down. I don't know if it's Toasties, but it's cornflake cereal.
Yes, and it seems like a very old type of cereal. And maybe he was trying to, like, use it as, like, a pun for, you know, serial killer. Like, a cereal box. I don't know. That might be pushing it a little bit.
I liked the air quotes as you were explaining.
Maybe. You can't see my air quotes.
they're not working in tandem. They're like, blinking.
They were. You guys missed it. My blinking air quotes.
That's right. They caught my snort that just happened on God.
Now, detectives found a cheap Barbie doll type object that was tied to a sewer pipe. He was wanting to make this look like Josephine Otero. And it was hard to think that he could possibly take another life, most likely being a child. They could not let that happen again.
So Detective Rolfe explains to us that if you really want to kick a police department into high gear, just threaten children, because that'll do it.
Absolutely.
So they drove down to the Home Depot. I realize it's called Home Depot, not the Home Depot. We're Midwest. We call everything the. The Walmart, the Home Depot, the Hy-Vee. Did you see what I just did? You didn't even catch it, did you?
No.
Because you're Midwest.
It is the Home Depot, isn't it?
Isn't it just Home Depot?
I've always thought it was the Home Depot.
We always call it the Walmart, too. It's not the Walmart.
It could be. Who knows?
Okay.
Someone tell us if we're wrong or right. We don't know.
Fuck it. I'm, you know, halfway through my Vizzy.
Yes.
I don't even care. My the Vizzy. Sorry. spicy seltzer come out your nose, I'm going to lose it.
Oh, I held it there. I held it there.
Because that would hurt.
That would hurt so bad.
So bad. Okay, so they drive down to the Home Depot. They didn't know what they were looking for, but they scoured the large home improvement store. I literally would have cried had I been one of the people to do that. I walk into Home Depot now, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Why are there so many aisles? Why do none of them make sense? Why are there just numbers? No.
Where do you start, though? Like, that'd be the hard thing. Would you have to start in the corner and make how?
Some of them go all the way to the ceiling.
I know.
I don't. Can't. What do you look for?
I know.
A Barbie doll? I mean, like, literally, they have no idea what they're looking for. They're just looking for a package.
Right.
When they couldn't find anything, they placed a sign asking for employees and patrons to let them know if they had seen anything unusual and to report that immediately. I mean, you and I have both seen weird things in grocery stores where people have made a decision.
Yes.
Made a decision and put something out of their cart in a weird spot, and you look at it and you take note and you're like, that was something that someone did.
It's so funny to me because I'm like, I would still buy both. Like, I would I just put shit in my cart and like my cart's always overflowing and I'm just like, well, we'll need it at some point. Just fucking take it. If it's not going to like expire next week, let's just fucking buy it.
I never put stuff away. You know why? Because I don't want to have to walk back to where it came from because I'm too guilty to leave it sitting wherever I'm at.
And then I come home and I have 5 ketchup bottles and I thought I didn't have any ketchup. And I'm like, oh, yay.
Every time.
I'm all like, of them are half empty, 3/4 empty.
We're good with ketchup for the next 2 years.
Yes.
Police were worried at this point that somebody had found something and just gotten rid of it because they didn't understand the significance. You know, I mean, who would think differently if they just saw maybe a Barbie doll stuffed in a weird spot, you know, on a shelf? Someone would think, oh, a little kid must have just left it here, so they would just dispose of it, probably.
Right, because again, he did not give any, like, details about what the package looked like.
Nobody knew. Yeah,
nobody knew. He just was very vague about it, so they're just trying to maybe think, okay, is it going to be something like the other things we found? Is it very, like, inconspicuous, or is it going to be very, like, we're going to know that's what he was talking about kind of thing? Yeah. They weren't sure.
I mean, the first package they got was a fucking word search.
Right.
You know, it could be anything.
Right.
A Sudoku.
Right.
For God knows. You know, it could be anything.
Yeah.
But Detective Otis says they get a phone call after midnight by 911 dispatch stating that she had gotten a call from a man who was an employee of Home Depot. He had recalled finding something suspicious in the bed of his pickup truck.
No.
Fuck.
Absolutely not.
That. Okay. First of all, my daughter asked me one day as we were getting into the truck to go to a sport. She's like, do you ever worry that somebody's hiding in the bed of the truck? And I'm like, well, not until now. I was fine
until you fucking
asked me. Now I'm afraid someone's in the bed of the truck.
Right.
And I'm like, well, the tonneau cover's on it. So if they are in there, I mean, it's going to take a little bit for them to come through.
Right.
But I would never think to look there.
Right. Right.
There had been another cereal box found, and he had it on his kitchen table, so he held on to it.
Okay, I'm sorry. You get something random in the bed of your truck, and you're, like, okay, picking that shit up, and you don't even know what's inside?
You mean like it could have been a bomb?
Who knows? Or, like, I don't fucking know.
I just picture dog shit. Like, it's probably going to be someone putting dog shit in it or something.
But, like, It seemed weird that he wouldn't have told someone. Your boss.
Maybe he just thought somebody dumped it. Because in my mind, he doesn't have like a cover on his truck. Some fucktard walked by and just threw some garbage in the back of his truck.
And if I would have thought it was garbage, it would have been in the garbage. Like, I would have thrown it away immediately. Why would I keep it? You know what I mean? It's just, I mean, thankfully he did, because then the police were able to retrieve it.
Well, and I think because he had looked inside and there was a note. So maybe that's why he didn't throw it away, but he wasn't quite sure, like, what is this all about?
Yeah.
So inside was this note, and it says, quote, "Can I communicate with Floppy and not be traced to a computer? Be honest, I will try a floppy for the test run sometime in the near future, February or March," end quote. For those of you who don't know what that means, that's a floppy disk. Also, not being used in the 2000s. So I'm a little confused on why he was still using that part of technology.
Because he's old. He's an old guy. Like, he's an old timer. Like, that's the stuff he knows. And he knows how to use it.
Like, it's like code.
Right.
can I communicate by floppy? Personally, I'd have thought he meant something else. Because again, you just said he's an old guy.
He's an old guy, yes.
Detective Ralph tells us that it wasn't a great strategy on BTK's part, though, because some items are deposited on floppies or thumb drives the moment they're inserted into a computer. Detective Gouge explains that BTK also wanted the police to respond to this message by way of a personal ad in the newspaper. Again, fucking old guy. We don't do that anymore. We have the internet now.
It still boggles my mind that newspapers are still a thing. I don't understand.
I still don't get it.
I don't. I have not, like, I think we've had this conversation before.
We just did.
I have not seen a physical newspaper in so many years.
Yeah.
I know they're still out there.
They're still out there. You can still buy them.
You can still buy them. Why?
They still have news.
Like, I Google everything I have questions about.
Like, I have a running, like, news story that pops up on my computer.
Yeah.
All the time. And yes. I can hit refresh stories to get the newest thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's a dying thing, but it's not dead yet.
Right.
Well, what he had asked is to refer to BTK as Rex. So if they're looking for this Rex in this personal ad, BTK will know that that's the police.
Yep.
The decision was made that they weren't going to be honest with him.
Of course. And the fact that he thought that they would, come on. You think that the police are going to be honest with you and say, oh yeah, nothing's traceable on a floppy disk. We could never find out who you
are.
You're
good. Floppy who? Never heard of her.
What? It just.
Seriously.
He's such a goddamn idiot. He's such an idiot. And he thinks he's so smart. I'm like, oh.
There's a fine line between so genius weird. And crazy. It's a fine
it
line.
It is so weird. Like, Ask someone else. The police are going to lie to you.
But he can't, because then he'll give himself away.
Ask your wife about, you know, oh, I wanted to try to save something on this floppy disk, but it's my coworkers or what?
I'm just holding it for a friend. It's not mine.
I mean, he could have thought of fucking something, you know, but he's an idiot. And yeah. That's why he's in prison.
So what they do is they respond to the request with another ad that says, quote, Rex, it'll be okay, end quote. The employee who had found this package in his truck was able to pinpoint the date that the box had been left there. So that's good. That also Absolutely. Gives them even more of a timeline.
And possibly camera footage.
Right.
From the parking lot, even right. though we know that camera footage always fucking sucks. But maybe get, like, the details of a vehicle, right?
Yes.
So they can link someone to that vehicle,
or
potentially.
Or even just see somebody walk up and put it in there.
Right. Exactly.
Maybe they'll get an idea, like, okay, it's a tall guy. It's,
right.
It's a woman.
Right.
You know, who knows? Detective Ralph says that the Home Depot had an extensive surveillance system. Of course they would, right? Maybe they'd captured video of BTK coming and going. The video was pretty grainy and fuzzy, and it was impossible to make an ID. Duh. We all know this. They were able to get some good footage of the side of his vehicle, though. So they watched it over and over and over to try to ID the make and model. Sizes versus other cars, the ground clearance, the wheelbase, the rake of the windshield. You know, all of the things that men can point out, but they can't find the ketchup bottle in the fridge.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
my husband can hear a sound and tell me what kind of car that is. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Can you hand me the remote? I don't know what it is.
Yep. Yep. It's crazy how much detail they went into to figure out every little thing about it to be like, okay, we know 95% sure that it's this kind of car.
Right.
Because we have, like, every
We've
single
studied
detail.
Everything we possibly
can. I fucking
can.
Love that. That I is know. Like my favorite shit about detective work.
Is you
like
know what that is? That's math. That's a lot of math.
It sure is.
So they sent pictures to video forensics and they quickly came back with a confirmation. This was a Jeep Cherokee. So now they knew his vehicle. They caught him on video. Now he wants to send a floppy. More mistakes are being made in the past few weeks than in the past 31 years.
Fucking awesome. Detective Otis says that 2 weeks after putting the ad in the newspaper, Fox TV station got a package in the mail. He sped over to the station to pick it up. He was too excited to wait. They gloved up, opened the package, and inside they found a floppy disk. Everyone in the police station gathered around silently while they put the floppy disk into a computer. Oh my God. You literally can't even buy a computer right now that probably has an option for a floppy disk.
I was literally just thinking, how did they have one readily available? No, you don't have a disk option.
Oh my God, no.
Right?
No. Some like Dell computers, some Microsoft computers still have a disk. Not for a floppy disk, though. It's like a CD.
Oh, right. Yeah, CD-ROM.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, so they definitely had some old computers still in that police station.
I mean,
or wherever they were.
Yeah. I mean, it's Wichita.
Yes, that's true. And isn't this still like the early 2000s
still? Yeah, we're talking like 2004, 2005.
Okay, so they definitely still had computers back then that had the floppy disk option. But nowadays, I don't even think you could buy one that has that option because they don't sell floppy disks anymore. Like, that's not really something you can buy unless you probably go on Amazon. That might be the only place you could probably buy one.
Everybody has those new like zip drives, right?
Yes.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
The little things that plug in?
Yeah. 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 That's an HDMI, you know, plug in type of thing. Yeah. Yeah. So very, very interesting.
Fucking A. How old are we that we... Oh my God.
I know. Now, Detective Gouge says that there was one document on the floppy disk that was listed test. The software for the Word document that was used was licensed to Christ Lutheran Church, and the document had been printed by someone named Dennis.
What the fuck?
A computer forensics examiner gets on the computer and searches Christ Lutheran Church, Dennis, and it comes up with the president of the congregation, Dennis Rader. Oh my God.
I can't.
It's the best. It is like, it's just such a stupid mistake that he would make. Like, Oh, it's so comical.
And of course it would show up at church.
Of course.
Why wouldn't it be church?
Oh my God. I can't. It's so comical.
That's like made up.
I know.
This can't be written better.
I know. Now, when they ran his name through all the databases, he had no criminal history whatsoever, and he just looked like an average guy to them. Nothing really stood out about him.
I mean, he looks fucking crabby to me, but...
Right. They find out that Dennis had been working for the city as a compliance officer. He was married and had a daughter and son. And they were able to get his address and they headed right out the door. It felt like they couldn't get there fast enough.
I bet.
Detective Ralph tells us that they knew his house would be on the east side of the road. The driveway wasn't visible until you were almost at his house. And when they got to his driveway, they saw the Jeep Grand Cherokee. So that just solidified it even more.
I would have just threw up in my lap. Like, immediately.
I know. They were so excited that they finally had the confirmation they needed to know that they had the right guy this time. He called his lieutenant immediately and told him to grab everyone he could get his hands on and get their asses down here. We got this dude. He can
just
finally
start grabbing people.
Yes, let's bring this guy to fucking prison. But the lieutenant told him to stop and that he needed to come back to the station. Could you imagine? Like, knowing you are like 20 feet away from this motherfucker, like getting him, and you have to fucking go back to the police station?
I know. Because if you don't, you could fuck this up and ruin it.
Right. And of course, after they thought about him.
They know it's him, but whether it's good or bad, in our judicial system, you have to have all the evidence.
Well, right. And he did know that. He knew that they didn't have enough evidence to arrest him. But this was something that he had been working on for the last 11 months.
Yeah.
And this was the case for him.
Yeah.
Like, to figure out and, like, have a finale to the case and make sure this guy was in prison for the rest of his life. Now, that was a really tough phone call to have to turn around and head back.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I can't imagine. And this is when the research started into Dennis Rader. They needed to learn everything they could, but they also needed to find out how to get his DNA. So they were going to be on watch. They were going to follow him around, see if he left any trash, any cigarette butts, any drink bottles, whatever they could get to steal his DNA.
Yes.
Literally.
Because they needed that comparison and that match to be definitive. And now they can arrest him.
Absolutely. But they did find out that his daughter attended Kansas State University. Now, Detective Otis says that university offered free checkups for females. So they were wondering if his daughter may have had an exam where they would have gotten her DNA.
Mm-hmm.
How they put this all together is just like crazy to me. How do you know that Kansas State University is offering these free checkups for females? Like, is it just something that is like known in that area? Like, it just seems like something so out of left field. They're like, oh shit, we could totally get his DNA this way because she probably got a checkup when she was in college, you know, because it was free.
Well, being crazy. That it's a state school, I went to a private Catholic college. They didn't give out birth control. So right. I would never have gone there to have like a checkup or an exam.
Right.
Because it wouldn't have been approved.
Right.
But here it is.
Interesting. Now, even though it would only be a familial match, it would be enough to arrest Dennis Rader because they would be able to know that it was half of his DNA. Right. Right.
And female, where they have male DNA already. Yes. Yep.
Yep. And they were able to obtain her DNA, and now they had to wait to get the results back. Oh my gosh. The time to have to wait for those results. I couldn't do it. I literally would be bouncing off the walls. That's when I wouldn't sleep.
Well, like, Maury does it in 30 minutes on his show. Right. So it can't be that long. Right.
Then Detective Otis gets a call that there was a familial match and Dennis Rader was BTK.
Oh.
It was the happiest phone call he had ever received in his life. He drove to their task force office. Detective Gouge and Ralph were already there and they were ready to get this guy off the street and into prison for the rest of his life. The next morning, the chief decided he wanted the SWAT team to arrest Dennis Rader, just in case it got messy, just in case, you know, you just never know what's going to happen, especially with a guy like this that had evaded police for so long. He might not be wanting to go willingly, right?
I don't know. I feel like with who he is as a person, I think you're fine. I think you're good.
I think it's just, it's but one I know, of those things I get you it. Just never
they don't,
know.
Well, and they also just don't want him to somehow get away.
Right, right,
so
exactly.
So the SWAT, there's more people.
Exactly.
And then you can blame it on them if something happens.
Right, right, exactly. Detective Otis insisted that the chief let them arrest him themselves, since they have been the ones chasing him for the last 11 months. Now, the chief wasn't really happy to hear this, but Detective Otis would have done just about anything to be able to arrest Dennis themselves.
Yeah.
Because they really were the ones hounding him.
Well, how annoying.
Doing
would
all
that
the
be?
Work. It would be.
It'd be really tough.
Be like, why are you stealing my thunder?
Well, and like, we're fucking detectives. We're not like, you know, we're
this
not.
This is our job.
Brand new. Yeah.
Right. We know what we're doing. It'll be okay.
Right.
Now, the chief does say yes, and on February 25th, 2005, they set out to arrest Dennis. They needed to keep this low-key, so their plan was to line up on the side street, and when they knew he was on his way home, they would set up the arrest. So he was kind of blindsided by it.
Detective Gouge tells us that there's a helicopter above that gave them insight onto where Rader was minute by minute. Detective Otis says that he'd been stopped on a curbside, and detectives grabbed him, pulled him from the truck, and placed him face down in the street. Oh,
that feeling must have felt so,
so
good.
Good.
Like, they probably just wanted to, like, shove his face into the gravel. Like, just
dig his
face.
You mean they wanted to just knee into the neck?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be able to contain myself, honestly.
I don't know if I would be either, yeah.
That's probably why I would never be able to be a detective, because I'd beat the shit out of
him. No, my rage. Way too much.
Right,
way
right.
too much.
Right. They're already handcuffed. I'm just fucking beating the shit out of them.
Oh, and then just
I would love
wait
it.
Until my hormonal days. Right?
Right, right.
Detective Gouge got to be the one to cuff him, and he said he was glad to be the one to do that.
Absolutely.
Detective Otis says that he was a really big guy, actually. He was stocky, tall, wearing his work uniform, and as they were about to move him, he looked at them and said, quote, "Would somebody please go tell my wife I won't be home for lunch? I assume you know where I live," end quote. Now, they had to put 30 years of violent crimes together against him in order to convict. Detective Ralph goes on to tell us that Dennis Rader was brought into their headquarters, escorted to a prepared interview room on the fifth floor. There was an FBI agent already there and a detective from the homicide department. He says that they were very impressive people with impressive credentials to try to appeal to Dennis's narcissistic side. They're not just going to send in some Joe Schmo.
I love that. That's such a smart angle because yeah. then he might just confess and they might not have to do all of this mm-hmm. digging of work. I mean, they would do it regardless, I'm sure.
Right.
But why not get a confession? Because then we know for sure. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. He said he did it. So now right. we know for sure he's going to prison. And then there's not that what if.
Right.
What if, like, a jury doesn't believe that he could have done it
exactly.
or something. You know,
exactly.
there's it's then it's just finite.
Detective Otis says that everyone else watched over a closed circuit TV and there was so much anticipation. Would he confess? Would he try to lie about it? How is this going to go?
Right.
Dennis is heard saying, quote, "As a suspect, I assume you have something on me. Otherwise, you wouldn't have brought me in," end quote. Ralph remembers that he seemed really cocky, that he didn't seem to be worried about what was going to happen to him. Gouge says at that moment, the lieutenant tells him how they caught him. We then hear a recording from the interview saying, quote, "Just say it. Say who you are," end quote. After a couple moments pass by, Dennis Ritter says, quote, "BTK," end quote. Otis then goes on to tell us that BTK talked for hours, gloating about what he'd done and even laughing at parts. Detective Ralph says that this was his greatest life accomplishment and he had never been able to talk about it.
Right.
I mean, think about it. He's a family man. He's a working man. He's, you know, big up in their family church.
Yep.
Who's he going to talk to about this?
Right. And I think he knew that he was already going to get convicted. Like,
oh, for sure.
They had enough evidence. That's why he was there. So he's like, well, why not? Now I can actually talk about it. I'm proud of what I did. I'm very proud of myself. And now I get to tell people.
Exactly.
Like, I get to actually talk about this wonderful experience that I had killing all these people. You know, like, yeah. It's horrific. It's horrible.
Yeah. My life accomplishment. Guess what I did?
Right.
And the biggest thing that Otis remembers is that he had no remorse. None. And that he was honestly just really sick of listening to him because mm-hmm. it was disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
We see some on-screen text that says Dennis Ritter pleaded guilty to murdering 10 people. And on August 18th of 2005, he was sentenced to a minimum of 175 years in prison. Detective Gouge tells us that the very next morning, he went to church and praised God for the work that he had done
mm-hmm.
and the ability to catch BTK and put him behind bars. Detective Otis says that Dennis's worst punishment isn't that he's locked up, but that no one gives a shit about him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Detective Ralph says that he'd infected his childhood, but now he was done. And very few people get to slay their childhood dragons.
Right, right. That is pretty...
So cool.
Pretty cool, though.
That is pretty cool.
I mean, if you think about it, he's like, I remember being terrified of this man. Because yeah. I didn't know who he was as a kid. And I was the one that got to put him away. Like... What a great feeling. And yeah. to know that he didn't kill again. Like, they were able
right.
to catch him before he actually murdered this poor girl. And who knows? Maybe it was just a story.
Could have been a story.
I mean, he was up there in age. So it probably would have been a lot harder for him to get away with it. It's not like he's agile anymore. It's not like he can run away from the scene or, like, be that meticulous in getting away with it where he might have just been talking it up. But still, it was probably just that, like, overwhelming feeling of, fuck yeah, I did it. Like, I was the one to put this asshole away.
Well, and he didn't have the ability to get so close to people as he did back in the day. So something that they don't talk about in this documentary is the fact that at the time, BTK worked for ADP, the security company that people buy for their homes.
Oh, that's right.
That's how he got access to a lot of people's homes. He would go in.
Oh, God, that is terrifying.
It's fucking terrifying.
Oh, God.
Moral of the story, just put the ADP sign out in your yard. You don't actually have to have the security system. No one has to come into your house.
Right.
So that's another thing. Like, he had that ability, but now he was a compliance officer for, what, the city?
Yeah.
So he's probably not walking into people's homes. He's probably riding a desk somewhere.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's it. That was the... That's how it ends.
Yes. Yes. Thankfully, we actually just looked it up. He is... 77 years old, still alive and rotting in prison.
Yep.
And great.
And
fucking
still
awesome.
Just looks crabby as fuck.
Yes.
I mean, he looks like he just woke up with a bad day and it just never got better.
Yes. Yes. And I'm sure it did. His wife.
He looks like Red Foreman from that
totally.
70s show.
Totally.
Just
totally.
More facial hair.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
But looks just like Red Foreman.
Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, it was good to know that his wife did divorce him. Right yep. after he went to prison. So thank God for that, too.
Yeah.
She got away from it. I know his daughter's like an advocate for people that have this stuff happen to them and their families or people have to live with their parents being murdered or what have you. Like, she's a very big advocate for that. So that's amazing.
That is amazing. Because it's a very small group of people out there who have to live with that kind of shit.
Absolutely. And I can't imagine it.
No.
Well, thanks so much for listening to another episode of Sheer Crime. We're so sorry it took this long for us to get another episode out. But we do appreciate you listening. And we are going to be back with the last episode on the Killer Speak series on Hulu, covering the case on Timothy Thomason. Apparently, he almost got away with the perfect murder. Mm-hmm. So don't miss the last episode. If you would like to still follow us on social media, we won't be going away with any of our groups or anything like that. You can still find us in our Facebook group, Sheer Crime Podcast Discussion Group. We are on Instagram at Sheer_Crime_Podcast, Twitter at Sheer Crime Pod, and TikTok at Sheer Crime Podcast. We wish you all a wonderful week, and as always, stay safe, stay sane, and remember, never run with scissors. Bye, guys.
Bye.